Hey Potters, welcome to episode 257 of Cosplay the Podcast for all things cosplay.
Yay!
Woohoo! Yay! Happy Friday, everybody.
It is Friday. Thank goodness.
We made it through another week.
Made it through another week. Go us.
I mean, I know that it's a holiday week, but that just means that all the work that we normally do is just crammed into less days.
Yeah, especially since this year with the holiday falling on a Monday, it just makes things go a little bit more loopy. It's just like, well, hopefully those in the States who celebrate, I hope that you guys have a good, long, wonderful weekend, that's for sure.
Yes, and please stay safe out there. It's a big weekend for not only fireworks being set off, but for people driving.
Yes.
So please, please, please be safe. And also, you know, if you're going to shoot off fireworks, make sure it's legal.
Make sure it's legal.
And please also have a thought for other people's pets.
Gosh.
And those that may, you know, have adverse reactions to, you know, such noises.
Mm-hmm.
So please, you know, keep them in your thoughts and act accordingly.
There you go.
All right. So for today's episode, we're actually going to skip past cosplay updates and go straight into our topic because we have a special segment for you guys.
It is a jammed-packed, very busy, uber-long CosPod episode, which we haven't done one of these in ages, but because the content is so stinking good, we need to share the whole thing.
Yep. It is in its entirety. We're not clipping this short. This is everything. So you guys get to enjoy it. Hey Potters, we have a special treat for you today. We've got a guest with us.
Woo-hoo.
Yay! This is Andrew Liptek, and he is a journalist, historian, and sometimes stormtrooper as a member of the legendary fan-based Star Wars organization, the 501st Legion, an all-around avid cosplayer. In his forthcoming book, Cosplay, A History, The Builders, Fans, and Makers, Who Bring Your Favorite Stories to Life, which is out now. Yay! Applause, applause, applause. Round of applause.
Andrew, welcome to the show. Thank you so much.
It's very good. Nice to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely.
So first and foremost, can you tell us just a little bit about yourself and what sparked your interest in cosplay?
Yeah. So I grew up and living here in Vermont, and I've always been a fan of science fiction, fantasy. One of the formative moments was actually this year is the 25th year is the special edition Star Wars special editions, and I got sort of interested in science fiction and costuming at the same time because I distinctly remember when I came back from the theater from seeing A New Hope, you know, I was like, I really want to be one of those stormtroopers. Like, I didn't know how to do that, but it was one of those things that I was really interested in trying to figure out. So this was mid high school or early high school, and you know, it's sort of like one of those things that, you know, I went to shop class. I was like, all right, can I make it out of metal? Too hard. And then by the time I hit my senior year, my school's band been pestering my music teacher for 6 years to play music from the Star Wars trilogy, and he finally said, yeah, okay, Stop asking. We'll do it. And at that point, I had learned through Star Wars Insider, the official magazine, that, you know, there was this group called the 501st that dressed up as stormtroopers. So I thought, you know, that's kind of cool. And to make that concert sort of, you know, above and beyond what it could be, I reached out to my local group, the New England Garrison, and said, like, you know, can you guys come up to this? Can you bring some stormtroopers? And one of them did. A guy named Scott Allen. He drove all the way up from Rhode Island. I think it was probably a 6 or 7 hour drive. Showed up, suited up, took some pictures, walked in at a certain, you know, he rehearsed a little bit. He walked in at the right moment and crowd went nuts. And afterwards, I had his email and, you know, talked to him. It's like, you know, how do I get one of these? And I had a summer job. I went and, you know, sent him a check for $500 and he sent me a box of armor. And that's sort of where I got started with the 501st Legion. Put it together. And then for the next couple of years, I basically just brought it out for the occasional Halloween. I worked at a bookstore, so like the Halloween night, I wore it. What else? Brought it to college. It didn't really do anything with it throughout college because, you know, college, you're busy and there's not much, you know, I didn't really have a ton of mobility. And there wasn't really any big Star Wars events in Vermont, but I had it kicked around, and some of my friends knew me as like the Star Wars guy. But once I graduated from college, I had a job, had a car, and I was like, all right, like how do I, this is something I can do. I had a little bit of disposable income, so I could throw the armor in a car and drive somewhere else in New England. So I started doing the troops all around the plate, all around the New England area. So I want to say my first one back was, it was probably a parade, the Lowell Halloween parade, which they hold every year. And that's where I sort of met the rest of, no, actually that's wrong. So I went to Star Wars Celebration in 2005, right before Revenge of the Sith. And that I brought the armor to that. That's where I met the rest of the 501st. And I was like, oh, wow, this is a much bigger group than I thought. And, I was sort of, while I was there, I was volunteering. I'm trying to think of that sort of the timeline. I was volunteering to help the Del Rey people. So the they had all the Star Wars authors coming in and doing signing lines. They had a stormtrooper come in at the end of the line to basically say, like, all right, that's it. Nobody else can come in. So that's what I was doing for basically that whole weekend. And that was a very cool experience, just being able to walk around with everybody else who has shared that interest. Then I graduated college a couple of years later. And then that's when I sort of got reintegrated with the group. So I started doing pretty much every troop I could do. I recruited a friend of mine who was at the time still in college, and we would basically say, like, all right, there's this troop down here, in Massachusetts or New Hampshire. We'll drive down. We get up super early in the morning, drive down, hit that troop, come back. We do sometimes two or three troops in a weekend. We'd do one up in Vermont, one down there. So we were pretty active, and it's sort of, it's all downhill from there. I mean, once you get started with this, and I think anybody who's like a really avid cosplayer, you really like, I can do this costume, I can do this, I can build this other one. So I went and built Attack of the Clones clone trooper and wore that out to a whole bunch of things. I just got much more into it, and it's been one of those hobbies where it's the 501st is a little bit unique in the way that it is a large group of people, not just a community, but like an organized group. And, I made a lot of very close friends there. People I still talk to today, I'm still very good friends with today. Some of whom I interviewed for the book, and some of whom are just really eager to read it. That's sort of been my cosplay journey. So I came up sort of in the Star Wars tradition rather than like through the other various branches that are out there, like, anime or just straight up Halloween to conventions or superheroes. So that's sort of where that's sort of my personal journey here. So the book is a second origin story. I've always been interested in Star Wars and costume, and while I have been part of the 501st, I've also been working as a journalist. About the same time I started. 2008, 2009, I started basically freelance writing for a bunch of websites. IO9, SF Signal, Tor.com, Kirkus Reviews. Just writing about science fiction, reading science fiction books, reviewing them, talking to authors. Mm-hmm. And over the years, I just kept doing that. And eventually I got a job at IO9. I was their weekend editor for a year. Oh. I moved over to another website, was their weekend editor. And was able to, in those roles, sort of write a little bit more about cosplay and just sort of like, this is a big convention that just happened. Here's a music video that somebody put together of it. Or just here's this one example of this cosplayer that just put this, one of them was a guy made the exosuit from Edge of Tomorrow out of like just junk he found around his house.
Nice.
Stuff like that. And I just kept writing about it, and I looked up the other day, February 2016, an editor at Saga Press, which is Simon Schuster's science fiction imprint. I'd known him because I had reviewed some of the books that he'd edited, and we knew each other through the science fiction circles. And he was basically just he sort of called me out of the blue, or we set up a call, and he was like, I was just at San Diego Comic-Con, and I heard about this group called the 501st Legion. I think he knew I was in it. He's like, is there a story here for how this, like a book length story for like how this came about. And you know, we talked a little bit. I just thought about it. Like, yeah, you can put together kind of an interesting. You can do a book about the 501st, but in order to do that, you have to sort of explain the context around it. So, like, how did, like, the 501st doesn't exist in a vacuum. Mm-hmm. It's something that sort of came. It has a beginning. You know, when Alvin, our founder Alvin Johnson, dressed up for the special editions 25 years ago. But like, what happened before that, and like, what got people interested in dressing up in costume? Because people had been dressing up in costume for years beforehand.
Oh yeah, I mean, decades and decades,
And even centuries.
Yeah.
So like, where does that fit? And the 501st story sort of fits this neat moment where you see this sort of normalization of geek culture and popularization, and you look at things like the TV show The Big Bang Theory, or say the TV show Castle or Fanboys, and you see these you know, sort of fairly mainstream depictions of cosplay. Mm-hmm. When I started doing this, people looked at me like, you're a weirdo. Nowadays, you know, you don't really get that sense that like this is really all that strange. You know, people are like, oh, you cosplay, or you go to those conventions. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I know somebody who does that, or I do that. So there's been this sort of normalization and mainstreamization. That's not a word. This really interesting phenomenon happening where this becomes a much more mainstream thing. Mm-hmm. And so that's sort of where we tried to sort of sell, you know, try to work out the book as like a 501st history. That didn't quite work. And, you know, it sort of was hitting walls in a couple of places, trying to get sort of approval and stuff like for that in places, and it just didn't work out. So I sort of shelved it. I got a new literary agent who was intrigued by the project, and we basically said, let's repackage it as a much more broad history of cosplay. Like, mm-hmm. Where does this whole thing come from? Is there a beginning? Is there, you know, what does it mean for the world of entertainment? What does it mean for fandom? What does it mean for you know, making and creativity, and all, as we basically put all those things together and got it sold, and here we are.
That's awesome. That's a lot.
It is a lot. And it's a really interesting story, because I just had never, like, there was things like, you know, you sort of get, you, when I had first come up in the 501st, you know, I never really thought about, like, you know, how did it come to be that we wear costumes outside of a theatrical or professional setting.
Right.
Like, I'm not an actor. I'm not, yeah, Halloween is a thing that is like the most normal thing where you dress up in costume, but like, where did it become sort of normal to do that? And that was one of the bigger questions I wanted to sort of figure out. And yeah, it's quite a journey, and it turned out to be a lot longer, a little bit stranger than I thought it would be. I think I feel like I understand the hobby quite a bit more. I feel like I appreciate it a lot more, just knowing how long it stretches back, and that's how many people have sort of been part of it over the years. So I hope, anyway, that's what people take away from the book and find it to be interesting and maybe learn something. So.
Yeah, definitely. So yeah. I noticed that when we were initially making communication about the book, that it was a lot of your photos and your journey through it. Can you talk about a little bit more about your journey in not only developing the book, but the pictures that you've included as well?
Yeah. So it's one thing to sort of write about it. It's another. I mean, this is such a tactile visual medium that it's one of those things that, like, you know, we had to include pictures. And when I was first talking with my original editor, Joe Monti, he was like, you know, we want to do, there's this great paperback, oversized paperback book called Paperbacks from Hell. this is a copy of it here. Really interesting history of like the pulp paperbacks of the 1970s, 1980s. And it's got tons and tons of pictures. Like, every page is just loaded with them. And sort of the original idea was that we would do a book like that. It would have a lot of pictures. That was, you know, really critically important, because, you know, it's one thing to describe a costume from, like, from some of the earlier cosplayers, but it's another thing just to see it in person. or to see it depicted in pictures where we have them. And the fortunate thing, and I have to sort of credit, there's a website called Fanac, F-A-N-A-C, which is a fan history website. And they have done a remarkable job archiving documents, pictures, memories of all these old cons that go all the way back to the 1930s. Mm-hmm. And they have a lot, tons of galleries of pictures of these original, you know, that people would take, and pictures that they took at the conventions. And, you know, we weren't able to use all of them, but we, you know, I reached out to some people who had been involved in fandom, and they were very generous in letting us use some of the pictures that they had. We also went to some archives and some other things, and, you know, because sometimes it, like, going to like the National Archives and like looking for a costuming picture, you get some really strange ones. And that actually led to some insights into costuming in and of itself in other ways, mm-hmm. which I thought was pretty interesting. Anyway, so that was sort of how we sort of approached the historical stuff. Who do we, you know, there are pictures like guys like Forrest Ackerman, who was sort of like, I guess I would sort of consider like the first sort of modern cosplayer.
That's usually the one that people most usually reference whenever they talk about the beginnings of cosplay. It's Forrest.
Yep. And that's, it's pretty easy to see why they do that, because it's the first convention, our first world science fiction convention. He's the first person to show up. And even then, like the reaction, like I talked to one of Ray Bradbury's biographers, and he was like, people would look at him and like, what the hell are you doing? like, because they hadn't, you know, nobody else dressed up in costume, and nobody had thought to do that. But the next year, in Chicago, the next WorldCon was in Chicago, they had five or six people. And you could sort of, it's kind of funny to see it, like what they were doing with that sort of thing. They realized that they could have some fun with it. They walked to the newspaper office and were like, hey, you know, we're time travelers from the future, and we're here to be here for the interview that you're going to give us. It didn't actually work. One of them was also pulled aside by the police and the cops, Chicago cops, and they were like, what are you doing? And they're like, and they wouldn't let him go until one of them showed him like a government ID. I think he worked for some government branch. I don't remember what it was. So that was some of the earlier days. But then it just kept going. Like every year, you see that. And as I looked from convention to convention, looking at the initial documentation. So like, you have the convention itself, but in the months beforehand, you have them giving out updates about the planning. And they were talking like, oh yeah, this year we're going to do. Yeah, we're going to do another, you know, people showed up in costume last year, we'll do this again. And then the next year it's like, well, this is becoming a regular thing, so we're going to have a big costume party. And then, you know, then the year after that, they would say like, oh, here's some suggestions for costumes to dress up as. And so you just sort of see this tradition build up like letter by letter. And that was pretty interesting to see. And along the way, you know, after the convention, people had taken pictures and they'd have their own personal archives that they had donated to this online archive. And, you know, they had them in their own personal collections and whatnot. So that's where some of those pictures came from. Others we got from public domain sources. Mm-hmm. Some of them are really old. We went back to mid-1700s, 1800s for some examples. There was a reenactment a quasi-reenactment in England, Eglinton tournament, 1817. I don't remember the exact date off the top of my head. Where it was basically like somebody within the sort of royal hierarchy was upset that they didn't have the pageantry that they used to have. And so he's like, well, you know, if we want knights in armor, we'll go and stage our own, you know, tournament with knights in armor. And they got like 100,000 people to show up to this event up in Scotland. And then it rained. It was like torrential rain. Yeah. It's torrential rain. It got washed out, but there's some great. I was doing some research into it, and there's a great picture of these knights and of fighting, and you know it's like, you know, have to talk about this sort of thing. So that's sort of where some of the roots go back a little bit further beyond the modern aspects of cosplay, and then there's other examples too, like Jules Verne, the science fiction author, had. A costume party. People showed up to his house as his characters.
Yep.
Arthur Conan Doyle dressed up as his character, Professor Challenger.
Mm-hmm.
There was a comic strip, Mr. Skygak, which was published mostly up in the American Northwest, and a couple of instances where people would dress up as that character.
Oh.
And there's some really interesting, just all these little isolated examples until you come up to science fiction fandom coming in the 1930s, 40s, 50s. And then from there, that's where you sort of see the modern costuming cosplay route come to coalesce into being, you know, it's through these conventions. And even then, it wasn't quite modern, like what we see in the modern day. Costuming was pretty much restricted to certain times. They would have masquerades, and like that's where you go. You wouldn't be dressed up and just posing for pictures throughout the convention. You'd bring your costume to that, and that was pretty much it.
Mm-hmm.
That changed when it came to when Star Trek came out, because Star Trek uniforms very cozy, you know, very comfortable. They're not really elaborate. They're just very simple. We've gotten a little bit off topic, so I'll sort of stick back in. Along the way, you know, people are taking pictures, and I'm actually just the other day, I retweeted a picture on Twitter of a woman who had dressed up as Captain Kirk, and she had like just it looked like out of tinfoil. She made the insignia. She had like a makeup case for the transponder and a hair dryer.
Nice.
You know, it's great. It's because that's all you needed for that type of costume. And then, you know, there's other ones that have popped up ever since then. For my part, for taking pictures, we announced the book in 2019, and like at the weekend I was at Star Wars Celebration in Chicago, and so I knew that we'd sold the book at that point. We were just waiting to announce it, but I had brought my camera and I had brought my my phone, and I was basically taking as many pictures of cosplayers as I could. And, you know, I started doing my interviews there, started doing recording. And basically just, that was a learning experience in itself, because I've never really stopped other cosplayers before and say, hey, can I take your picture? And, you know, it just took a little bit of mustering up the courage to do that. Every time I go to a convention, it takes me a little while to warm up to the con floor to sort of figure out, you know, who do I pick out to take pictures of. And then I took a couple hundred on my phone and on my regular camera there. Later that summer, I went to some other conventions. There's a local one. So someone's more local to me. Boston Fan Expo is one I went to. I went to Dragon Con. Rhode Island Comic Con. And basically just sort of took as many pictures, because I wanted to get I had tons from years before of Star Wars costumers through my work in the 501st, but I didn't have tons of superheroes and everyone else. So that I was trying to like, what else can I get? Just if, even if they don't make it into the book, what else can I take pictures of? And along the way, meeting people with interesting designs, that helped me shape who I was talking to. I have a good friend of mine, Katie Henderson, here in Vermont, who had also come down to that Dragon Con, and she does Destiny cosplaying.
Oh, cool.
So we sat down for an interview. I sat down with an interview for her, and we talked about, you know, how important foam was as a building material. We talked to Spider-Man cosplayers and other folks that I've met along the way, just to sort of get a better idea of like what goes into the hobby. And those pictures really helped drive some of that conversation. And, you know, in some cases it was like, you know, I took someone's picture like, oh, wait, let me talk to you a little bit further about this. a really good example would be some of the cosplay repair folks who they show up at conventions with a big backpack full of crap. And they, you know, while I was interviewing somebody, she was helping fix someone's arm.
Cool.
She was gluing parts together. and you know, those are pictures that did make it into the book. So originally we had planned for like 300 images. I think we pared that down to like 100, 150 to 200, just because I think because of space.
Yeah.
My original manuscript was supposed to be 75,000 words. I ended up turning in a lot more than that. So it was a book that also grew in the telling, which is kind of fun. Not fun when you get to a deadline and you're like,
okay, no,
now I have to finish.
Now I have to finish it. And then I have to go through and edit it. And like, oh, there's too many words now.
what was funny is I turned it in a week before COVID lockdowns hit. So exactly 2 years ago.
Oh, wow.
As of the time we're recording this. And last fall, when I had a new editor come in on the project, you're like, all right, I need to do another chapter because COVID upended everything.
Yeah.
And that changed a little, not quite how I thought about cosplay, but it changed like how I looked at sort of like the future cosplay and sort of realized that this is not something that's fully dependent on in-person conventions. You can also, you know, this is also, there's a huge online component to it. And I'd written quite a bit about the internet and the impact of social media, but this sort of was a good example of how does this hobby persist? And like, what's the future going to look like? Mm-hmm. And so that was a pretty interesting thing. And I actually, last fall, I went to the 2021 Boston Fan Expo and got a whole lot of pictures of cosplayers wearing masks. Wow. And got to write a bit about that. And that was quite a bit of fun too.
Cool.
So.
Well, clearly you still have a passion for cosplay as seen by the items behind you. So we actually wanted to ask you a few questions as a cosplayer.
Yeah.
So sure.
You've clearly made quite a few iterations of Stormtrooper costumes. What's been your favorite material to work with thus far?
I mostly work with plastics. Mm-hmm. And because most, if you don't know what happens with a Stormtrooper costume is, it is you give somebody money, they send you a big brown box and it's full of shaped plastic. It's been vacuum formed, and my first one came trimmed, but all the other ones I bought, they've come, you know, just rough. Mm. Yeah, I have to trim them out and fit them. So I've had to that's basically been the material I've worked with the most. So I've gotten really familiar with like glue and like what types of adhesives, you know, work the best. Work very closely with the Dremel, shears, sandpaper, everything else. Sort
a lot of
in between.
Sandpaper.
And so, like, that's been sort of the biggest thing that I've had to work with. Although, like, some of the costumes I've done, the short trooper I've built, this I think was actually probably not the first time, but it was like one of the few times I've actually worked with like, cast resin. Mm. And that was sort of a learning experience in and of itself, because, you know, I had to, figure out how to cut it out, how to stay safe while cutting it out because of all the dust that it generates. The short trip was also sort of challenging because I also had to do a lot of paint. I had to do a lot of weathering. Mm. And I think that's this costume in particular was probably my favorite because, not only the character not only looks cool, but it's also the process that I went through to build it. So I started building this in 2016. So before Rogue One came out, I got a kit that a fan had put together before the film had come out, with the idea of if I can finish it before the movie comes out, I'll be able to troop at the theater for the premiere. And I was able to do that, but it was one of those things where I had to learn a lot, like not only fitting all the pieces together, getting the right paint colors. The first iteration I did when I debuted the costume was actually the wrong color paint. It was too light. So when I ended up having to repaint it to get the right accurate, once we figured out what the accurate color was, I was able to get it to look a little bit better. Figuring out how to do the weathering to make it look in universe and used. That was probably the most fun I had, because it's basically just thinking about the story that goes into it. Like, all right, how does this work? How does this appearance work? And you sort of have to backtrack. Like, this is what I want it to look like. This is how this would happen. So like getting paint in the nooks and crannies and then wiping it clean and like imagining like, all right, this is a character that would have been like on the beaches or in the dirt and on the front lines. So that was kind of a really fun aspect to it. And I've done the same thing with the clone trooper I built over the years. So, and I did the same thing with the this guy, which is a General Merrick helmet from Rogue One. And again, it was trying to, you know, imagine like this is a in-universe object that was used. So, you know, putting as much grime and dirt onto it made logical sense. So, like sticking stuff into the corners as if it's like carbon scoring. So that and trying to just get it to look right. This is a favorite of mine because it's also very comfortable.
That's my favorite one I've seen.
It's really cool.
There's a lot of fun together. I have another one I have to put together. I'm looking to put another one together this spring, and I'm looking forward to that process. So.
All right. Very cool. Very cool. And the last cosplay question I have for you is, what one piece of advice would you give to first-time cosplayers?
I would say don't get hung up on mistakes, because anything that you mess up can be fixed or patched over with paint or with Bondo or something. Or you can just, you know, if it's really bad, you can just, you know, toss it and start over. I've helped and mentored a lot of troopers here in Vermont. We have a local group that called the Green Mountain Squad. Oh. And the 501st, we are organized. We've got the Legion, which is a worldwide organization. We're split up geographically by location. So we've New England Garrison, Garrison Excelsior, which is in New York, Southern California Garrison, which is in Southern California. From the Garrison, if you've got isolated groups within that territory, 10 or more people, you can make a squad. So we have a Green Mountain Squad for here in Vermont. So I was one of the first troopers in Vermont to start doing this. I wasn't the first, but I was one of the early ones. And we have about 30 people now. So that from The Force Awakens on, we had a lot of people interested in doing stormtroopers. So we had we did a group build at one point. And what we saw with a lot of people was, like, they're very hesitant. You know, we just spent $500 or $600 on this, you know, box of plastic. We don't want to mess it up. It's like, you have to start. And the first cut is always the hardest one, because you don't want to, like, have that one mess it up. But again, you can fix stuff. You can either patch it up, or you can readjust things. Nobody's going to get it right the first time. And I always love seeing pictures from cosplayers online, and not like on Instagram or Twitter or wherever, where they post like their first cosplay and their latest cosplay, and you see the progression. And I can see where that would be discouraging for some people, like oh man, I can't do this really fantastic thing. But like when you see that first before image, you realize that, you know, this is somebody who has learned, and every time they rebuild something, they're always practicing and always learning. You can then you know, you can get up to that point. It's like anything, like you just practice. And then you can, you know, if you stick to it and you learn from your mistakes, or even if you don't learn from your mistakes, I still make plenty. you can always fix them, or you can especially with like this helmet, is actually a really good example. I shipped this down to New York City when I was working at a job down there. And when it came back, it's a huge crack all the way down because of shipping. And it was like, it's one of those, horrifying things. But like, and I realized, like, well, it's just a crack. It's not terribly fatal. Mm-hmm. You can still see where it is if you look closely. But, you know, on the inside, I just put a patch of plastic. It holds it in place. I put some Bondo, and it works. And, you know, even looking at this, like, right now, if I was a total perfectionist, I'd really be annoyed. But, like, there's still a little bit of a line here where I didn't quite sand it down perfectly. You know, there's other little bits and pieces here. But, you know, perfection, I don't think perfection is really the goal for this hobby. I think if you make something that looks good, especially if you're, like, if you're posing for a picture, or if you're just, taking a picture of yourself, or you have somebody coming up to you just to see the costume, you know, it doesn't need to be perfect. I mean, even like Hollywood, you know, you'll see costume malfunctions if you look closely. Like, look mm-hmm. at the original stormtroopers from A New Hope.
Yep.
You see tape on them. You see the backs of the legs splitting open. Yep. Perfection isn't the goal, I don't think. I think the goal is to make something that you're happy with, and that people will enjoy. And don't let mistakes bog you down. Also, wear respirators. don't put your life at risk or for paint fumes or resin dust, because that stuff was really not good for you.
Both very good pieces of advice.
Safety first.
Safety first.
Yep.
Well, clearly you have poured your passion and hard work into this book. It came out beautifully, and it would be an amazing addition to any cosplayer's library. For those that actually want to go out and purchase it, where can people find your work?
Anywhere you can buy a book. So
oh, cool! Yay!
This isn't a self-published thing. You can go to Simon Schuster's website. You can find the product page there. I'm sure you can provide a link in your show notes.
Yes.
And that page has a jumping off point for all the other retailers. So you can buy it in, it's a trade paperback. It's, I don't have the final copies on me, but it's, you know, about yay big, 370 pages or thereabouts. You can also go in, if you prefer an audiobook, you can get it as an audiobook.
Oh, cool.
And cool. It's also available as an ebook.
Oh, neat. Yay.
So
cosplayers can take it with them when they're flying on planes to the next region.
Yeah, that's cool.
Or you can listen to it as you take a walk, or if you're building something, you know, throw it onto your iPhone or whatever you're listening to, and turn it on and
while you're working in the background. Yeah, that's so cool.
And you can learn about the history.
Oh, neat.
The history of where you fit into this larger story. That's one of the that's sort of what I hope people will take away from it, is that especially if they are cosplayers, you're part of a much larger tradition than just, like, you know, the people that you follow on Instagram who are doing the same thing.
Yeah.
We're all part of this much bigger story that stretches back hundreds of years, you know, like, you know, and one of the things that we try to start sort of the starting point with the book is, like, you know, where do we start dressing up in costume to begin with? And the basic thing that I've been able to sort of figure to sort of boil it all down to is that, you know, it's dressing up in costume to relate to a story, whether that's real or fictional. So, you know, there's a long tradition of theatrical performances. There is a really fascinating history of, like, protest performances, you know, on the streets of, like, Philadelphia and New York. People dress up in these, like, grandiose, like, militia uniforms, and that sort of existed for a while. That sort of, in some elements of it became Halloween costuming. Halloween was not Halloween costuming, but it used to be for Thanksgiving. So there's all these little weird little nooks and crannies and twists and turns that we've gone through to dress up to sort of relate to these stories we love. And you know, nowadays in the modern, you know, the modern entertainment world, you know, it's much bigger because, you know, we've got streaming services and Marvel movies and Game of Thrones and new Star Wars stuff coming out all the time. You know, how we relate to these stories, I think, is important. I think it's important for studios to sort of pay attention to, because, you know, these are the most passionate fans that are doing this. And, you know, it's one way that people find community and make friendships and make these sort of very valuable social supports that, you know, we need more and more of these days. So.
Especially after a pandemic.
And during a pandemic, I mean, like, or in the, like, as we're talking now, you know, in the midst of a war, in Europe, I mean, like, you know, these are connect. I really think that cosplay and fandom is one of these things that bridges all these differences that we have all over the world. Because, you know, I'm through the 501st. You know, I've got counterparts in Russia. I'm pretty sure I've met Russian 501st members at Celebration. You know, and there is a Ukrainian outpost in Ukraine. There's a Russian outpost. You know, these are people who, you know, they have the same interest that transcends political boundary. So I think that, you know, as we have these troubles in the world, I think this is a place where we can take solace in. Not to say that those friction points are not unimportant. I mean, there are certainly people who I disagree with vehemently with when it comes to politics, you know, within the 501st, but, like, you know, we do have this thing that connects us. And I think that that's valuable. And and it doesn't matter. It's not just Star Wars, but, like, Marvel Studios, costumes based on Marvel comics or Marvel films, DC comics. You know, I think those are ways to sort of bridge all those really big gulfs. And, you know, it's certainly not a solution for everything, but, you know, it's still important. So hopefully there's an element of that people will take away from it as well.
Yeah, very valuable lesson. I think all cosplayers could definitely stand to take to heart.
Yeah, and that's what I'm really happy about, the sort of the cosplay community that I've seen and been part of, is just how supportive it is. I mean, you do have people who are like, oh, well, that's not really canon, or, you know, like, you can't have a black Zelda or Superman or whatever. But, like, you know, it doesn't matter. You have these things that you can, you have this community that is very, very supportive of those people, everybody. And you can show up in a costume that is not great, but, you know, if you're happy with it, you know, I think people will be happy with you for it. So, you know, that's the thing I'm always really happy to see with, like, you know, when I see people, you know, see cosplayers just looking at you, you see the effort that is literally on their sleeve that they put into it. And it's literally the fandom showing through. So,
indeed. Great way to end the interview.
Andrew, yeah. Right.
Thank you so much for being with us today.
Yes. Thank you for joining us on CosPod. This is great.
It's been a pleasure.
And we're back
from a wonderful, wonderful interview.
Yes, we would like to sincerely again thank Andrew for sitting down with us. That was amazing. We chatted both before and after the interview, and his room makes me so envious as a nerd and a geek.
Right?
It was so cool, and he is really, really friendly.
Yeah, he's such a nice guy.
The important thing for you guys to know is that his book is in fact out now.
Woo!
And if you would like to purchase a copy, which we do encourage you to do, you can find it on his website. And of course, that will be present in the show notes so that you guys can go there. And also, if you would like to purchase a physical copy of the book and potentially get it signed by him at a local convention, you can find his upcoming convention appearances also on his website, which again is in the show notes for your viewing consumption.
Yeah. He also has all of his social media profiles. He's been pretty much everywhere and anywhere helping promote the book and getting some more info and talking to other cosplayers. He did a huge thing with Star Wars Celebration. So go follow his Twitter feed. He's got a lot of great photos on there and has met all cool kinds of people. So it's worth following him.
Mm-hmm. And it may be that, you know, he'll be doing a panel at a convention local to you nearby.
Oh, that would be cool.
So take advantage of the opportunity if you have it.
Yeah.
All right. Do we have anything else for this episode?
That's it.
Rock on. Well, of course, if you would like to join in the conversation and let us know what you thought of the interview, feel free to join in the conversation via any of our social media, which, of course, you can find here.
For those who are watching, all the information is located underneath Amber, per usual. For those who are listening, you can visit us at cospod.org or on Facebook and Instagram at Cosplay Podcast or on YouTube and Twitter at, of course, CosPodcast.
Or, of course, you can email us. podcast@cospod.org, where you will get an answer from each one of us along with a Nick Cage meme. You can let us know, what would Nick Cage write as a foreword to this book?
Oh, so many options, so little time. Oh.
Indeed. Maybe it would just be a single word or phrase.
That would be so Nick Cage.
It would. But of course, you all need to let us know what you think. Otherwise, please keep working on those cosplays, stay safe, stay healthy, so that we can all see your smiling, friendly faces at your favorite local convention ASAP. Otherwise, we will wish you guys happy cosplaying. See you next time in episode 258. Bye-bye, everybody.
Bye, guys.